bliss of unawareness. If we make ourselves ignorant, if we actively delude ourselves, then we are making a terrible mistake. We rob ourselves of the clarity of truths. We miss the beauty as well as the full depth and worth of the universe.
Hey folks, welcome to another week of Prison Focus. This is London on KPOO San Francisco. So happy that you guys are able to join me today. I missed you guys last week. I'm actually doing this show by myself today. Nube is, she's just out today and she's taking a break, much deserved break. And but she'll be back next week. And yeah, so... okay, let's get centered before we start the show. It's just been a little crazy this morning, but it's okay. That's life. So when you have those little moments and unexpected, you know, whatever, it's just important to not let it just stay on you, but to take a moment, breathe in and out, get grounded, and just be in a state of gratitude. So that's what I'm doing right now, and it's all going to work out. I'm super excited about today's interview. This person that I'm going to interview, I just met him at the All of Us or None meeting. Just super dope individual, just got out, just hitting the pavement running, and just has some amazing things going on, just super excited. And so I just thank you for joining me this week. So we're going to take a short music break, and I'll be back with him.
They all do. If one thing I know, I fall but I grow. I'm walking down this road of mine, this road that I go home. So am I wrong for thinking that we could be something for real? Now am I wrong for trying to reach the things that I can't see? But that's just how I feel. That's just how. Just how I feel.
Tell me I'm wrong, I don't wanna be.
Hey folks, welcome back. That is one of my favorite songs that helped me get through my time. That's Nico and Vince, Am I Wrong? Just so inspirational, so good. I just love it. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, welcome. Welcome to Prison Focus Radio. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi, my name is Minister King William. Some of my closest friends and comrades call me General Parfait. I'm a delegate for the United Cash Brothers and Sisters International Union. I'm happy to be here today.
Well, thank you, Minister King, for joining us here, just short notice. And I was already wanting to getting you on here because I just met you on Thursday at the All of Us or None meeting, and you just like are so inspirational. You like, can you tell our listeners how long you've been home?
I've been home since last Tuesday.
Tuesday? Oh my God, welcome home.
Yeah, basically I had, when I was down for the last 18 years in the state, mm-hmm. I basically strategically put me a blueprint together and I had knew what I was going to do before I got there. So I'm just pretty much trying to follow the script, follow the plan.
That's super dope. So, Minister King, I like to break it down for our listeners. So you said that you did 18 years?
Yeah, I did time in High Desert State Prison, Corcoran State Prison, the Pelican Bay. And I went in 2000 on a bank robbery, actually. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I was still young. I was kind of wild. Got caught up in a lot of prison politics. And then I say 2013, actually, I had went to the SHU, and I fell right into the hunger strike. And that's when I started understanding that, the objectively subjected to this hostile environment, coupled with so many inmates that didn't have an ideology, didn't have a plan of self, mm-hmm. and the yard itself was chaotic. Mm-hmm. So then I met a lot of brothers that was had an ideology and was politically involved with the taking down the prison industrial complex through demands, through grievance, mm-hmm. litigation, to say. And then I started becoming more intrigued, and I started writing articles for San Francisco, Bayview, Prison Focus, and others alike. And that's when I realized and crystallized, okay, I found my voice, and it's time to get involved, especially with the younger brothers on the yard, and they really didn't have no aim, no focal point in life.
Well, okay, this is so, okay, so let's just break it down. Let's start from the beginning, Minister King, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So, you went in, you said, at what year did you go into prison?
2000. I landed in High Desert State Prison.
2000? Okay, and how old were you when you went in?
I was about 28.
Wow. And so, can you tell our listeners, you said that you went in for bank robbery. Is there things like, how was your childhood? Like, how did you, what were?
Well, I was born and raised in Oakland, California.
Okay.
And I was raised by a single parent, except this single parent was a man. Mm-hmm. My father was William Brown Sr. And coming up through Oakland, it was kind of harsh. And my father, he went to prison in 1985. He got caught up in one of the first drug raids, the Brown family, and in a crack. And I was pretty much on the street alone, literally. And one of my aunt Ella, she took me in and she started raising me. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of rebellious. They had took me down there to the Sacramento area. It was kind of foreign to me. I couldn't adjust. I got caught up in the youth authority, went to youth authority. I was in and out prison, parole, prison, I should say. Mm-hmm. And from there, I kind of got the gist of being a YA baby, I should say. I got the gist of, okay, this is how it is being inside of the being the youth authority, being the ward. Mm-hmm. It's the feds. I ended up going to the federal prison. Mm-hmm. And I seen a lot of things. I seen the matter of fact, I seen the difference between federal and state. Mm-hmm. You know, the politics, I should say. It was a different class, different prisoners. It was just on a whole another. It was unity. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, when I think it was 95 or 96, they had a crack law protest because of the what they call now the Rockefeller law. Mm-hmm. When that, all the races came together. It wasn't just the brothers. It was multicultural, multiracial. It was everybody that came together.
And, you know, they so was this in federal prison or the state prison?
It was in federal prison, okay. And this was like a protest.
Uh-huh.
And so once I seen that, I seen like, okay, everybody centralized. They came together behind this one core issue. Mm-hmm. When we came together behind this one core issue, it felt good to see the unity of all races, all everybody promoting peace and pushing one agenda against this, you know, the U.S. guidelines between powder and crack. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I ended up getting released, mm-hmm. and I caught the case in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And although I actually wasn't guilty, I went to trial and got found guilty. I wasn't guilty of committing the crime.
Mm-hmm.
I still stood. You know, I felt, you know, destiny is crazy because, you know, everything happens for a reason. I wouldn't have got involved with the things that I got involved with had not went there.
Right.
You know, because I was kind of wild. But when I went to prison, I really got active, though, when I went to state prison.
So let me ask you, let me take a step back, Mr. King. You just have so many questions I have. Okay, so you said that you were in and out in the youth authority as, you know, a child. Do you feel like, you know, one of the things right now that we're fighting right now is the juvenile system, you know? Like, I'm constantly wearing my shirt, you know, build no more youth prisons, build youth leaders and so forth. And it's just so sickening that these kids are put into juvenile hall for just to, you know, for the craziest things. And period, like, they're kids. They just need love. They need guidance. They're crying out for help. They, you know, these kids, they didn't just wake up and just, you know, just start. There's a reason for their actions or acting out. Instead of folks creating diversion groups and seeing what's going on with this young person, how can they help, assist them, you know, this, that, and the other, the first thing that they want to do is throwing them into this juvenile hall. So do you feel like that played a negative part in, like, in the path that you started to take, you know, being exposed to the youth prisons?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think it started at home because if you're coming up in a dysfunctional environment,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I said earlier, I was brought up in a single parent household, even though my father was a strong male. I think coming up in an environment like Oakland, mm-hmm. you become a product, but it go beyond that, though. You know, it's like the framework. The framework that's there is like, you, for example, you got the railroad tracks by the village or anywhere else. And then you start looking. You don't understand this until later, that it's environmental racism. You got the alcoholism, mm-hmm. the drugism. It's right there. So this is what you become a part of. And this, your role models are drug dealers. And the biggest role model you may get is being a football player. So
right.
some of the things that we're exposed to, even in the school system, it doesn't teach you to run your own conglomerate. It teaches you how to be a worker. So we get these mentalities of, oh, I can only do so much. I can't. So when we embrace that, we just subject ourselves to become part of a system that's already established for us, a framework, like I said earlier. And then once we start engaging and we go to juvenile hall, we're just another number. you go to wide from juvenile hall to youth authority or to the camp, Jabal camp or something. It's just another number. And they really don't get involved at that time when it's really, you know, that's the best time to get involved with is with the youth to see.
Absolutely.
What are you, what the cycle politics that you going on with at home, or, you know, do you have alcoholism in the household? Do you have two parents?
Right.
What could I do to empower you with the skills? And I feel like even at the juvenile level, they should learn their rights. They should learn the law. They should learn how to, you know, how to cook for themselves, and, you know, how to obtain basic necessities outside of the, getting involved with gangs and whatnot. So, yeah, I understand the 260, 261. You know, I've been an activist for that, too, for some of the brothers that was incarcerated and behind the walls. I was helping them do petitions so they were able to obtain some type of hearing through the board or whatnot.
Okay, so you said the 260, 261, you know, for, I'm not sure what that is. Can you tell me?
Yeah, as in 261 was primary for the youth coming in there, and then they had the nonviolent that came after that was under Prop 57. And 260, 261 was for juveniles, what they have now. And they didn't have that back when I was coming through the system.
Mm-hmm.
Had they had, and they're like, oh, okay, we're getting a real second chance.
Right.
But, you know, my thing is, I don't think no youth should be subjected, being treated as an adult.
Right.
It only happens when you see the non-New African man and woman, once it become a white issue, and now it's like, okay, we got to change the law.
Right.
But for years,
right,
our brothers and sisters, they've been going to jail. And now I think that's when the sister, Michelle Alexander, was talking about with the mass incarceration.
Right.
So
it's just, it's like a vicious cycle, right? And so it's like, I love how you pointed that out, the environmental racism, right? A lot of folks don't know what that is. And it's become so attached, so part of our community that we don't even, it's our normal. It becomes our normal, right? And we don't realize that molds us and our thinking and our, you know, just nothing healthy about it, right? Nothing healthy about it. And I love it because I am so always talking about diversion groups, like putting more focus and funds into diversion, building up our community and so forth, because I feel like, you know, within the low income communities, these poor communities and so forth, these kids, they're only acting off of what they're exposed to. If no one treats them with love, if people treat them as if they're a thug, or, you know, write them off or pay no attention, that molds them. They feel that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, so like one of the things that we was trying to combat, and even in prison, was some of the drugism and alcoholism. Mm-hmm. That was inside of the prison cipher. And we know a lot of times when you got elders, some of the brothers that was coming out of the solitary confinement, they was coming out there to a culture shock. So one of the things that we did in Pelican Bay, under the guise of the agreement and hostilities, we put together a self-help group, a peace program.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, we were before I left, we was in due process of developing a curriculum to teach on minicide and genocide, you know, cultural genocide, so they can begin to understand at a young age what does it mean to be objectively subjected to institutionalized racism. It's just through food, a way of living, a lifestyle, a way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we're trying to change the narrative through music, through arts and culture. We trying to bring it back to, you know, let your art and music be a teaching factor. Let's get off of that, because, like you said earlier, you know, it's a system where, by design,
where one become not just a product of his environment, but he thinking it's actually, he or she thinking it's actually cool to be turned up to be a gangster because that's all they know.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just, you just speaking to me right now. So let's move a little bit forward. So now you're inside, right? So I done federal time myself. I just got home in October. And I'm always, I talk to folks, a lot of the folks that I work with done state time. And I do see some difference in the way they've done their time versus the way that the things that I've been exposed to and how I've done my time and so forth. But it's, I love like how your perception of, you know, of how, you know, the camaraderie maybe, you know, within the federal system. But honestly, one thing that I feel that I love since coming home that I see more on the state side is the more support level of folks who are coming out, who are like, that's just been my experience thus far, is like folks that have done state time are just really like about still putting together support groups on this side, like reintegrating back into society. Do you have any opinion or about that?
Yeah, I think that was one of the reasons why I immediately tapped in with All of Us Are None. And then you got other groups like Poor Magazine, because they've been centralized and bringing together committees to attack the long-term solitary confinement with family and friends. And they're being given feasible resources for those coming home, whether it's reentry, jobs, or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was saying earlier. I'm trying to figure out a way how we could bring both the Fed and the state, because I got some brothers that just got out of the federal prison, and they really didn't know what was going on in the state. For example, when we was doing the mass hunger strike, mm-hmm. or when we was doing prison protests in 2018 against men the 13th Amendment. And, you know, I've been trying to bring it to their attention that, hey, you know, this isn't just an individual thing. This is a collective. Right. So if we could get both sides and find some way to bring all our issues together under the guise of not prison reform, but abolish. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are saying reform, and reform is just another way to keep these policies alive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like putting the snake in the hole, but it's deeper in the hole, but the snake is still there. Mm-hmm. You know?
So, yeah, so Minister King, can you take us back to that moment? Like, what did you say? You guys went on a prison strike, a hunger strike.
Right.
Can you kind of, like, I believe in just, like, you know, a lot of folks that listen to us, they're for the movement, they're curious about the movement, but they've never been on the inside. Or like myself, you know, just because you've been to prison doesn't mean you know, prison is not black and white. You know, it's different things, it's different politics at every single institution. It's, there's a lot of things that are like and things that are different. So what was that like? What can you kind of create a picture, a narrative for us, that whole, like, why did the hunger strike start? What was that like being on hunger strike? The emotional aspect of it, going through it, and what was it like at the end of it?
Well, basically, CDCR had a lot of flagrant policies and procedures set in play. For example, if they found us with books, it was like an Aztec book or a book from Blood and My Eye, George Jackson, or anything as such, or, you know, somebody dropped a 1030 on us. Then they're
speaking. A 1030 is a what? I'm sorry.
A 1030 is a confidential document that some type of confidential informant alleged that you was affiliated or associated with some type of prison gang, prison or street gang. But what it was is it was going all the way back. If you go all the way back to the early party, the COINTEL, Counterintelligence Party, what they was doing was sabotaging particular groups. And they knew, this is why I keep being highlighted. I'm trying to highlight curriculum. They knew that a lot of the elders was teaching individuals to come out of that criminal mind state and into a more revolutionary mind state. And when I say revolutionary, I'm talking about self-change. Mm-hmm. So when you had these individuals on the yard, on whether it was in San Quentin Adjustment Center, whether it was in, you know, Pelican Bay, High Desert, Folsom, or Tracy, you had particular groups of individuals that was trying to help change brothers and sisters' mind to go out there and be productive in society. So, you know, the government seen them as a threat, as security threat groups, which I don't even call it security threat groups. I say stop the guerrillas because, you know, the primary focus is to fight the bill for brothers and sisters out in the community. So they get sent in as agent provocateurs to sabotage the work that was being done behind the walls because it was a lot of collective action. So what happened then, brothers from the Nation of Islam, brothers there that they seen that was part of the Panther Party or, you know, others alike, they put him in solitary confinement. And they put him in long-term solitary confinement. I'm talking about, you had some of my brothers that was in long-term solitary confinement for 25, 30 years. And, for example, Hugo Pinnell, he was there for a long time. You know, okay. Todd Wadupa.
Can I ask you a question real quick? So, what does solitary confinement look like, feel like, versus, like, what is that? Just for folks that don't know.
So if you're in solitary confinement, you're pretty much stuck in the cell inside of a cage for 23 hours a day. Mm-hmm. You come out for a shower, maybe recreation for 1 hour. Mm-hmm. And in Pelican Bay, they didn't have no windows. There was no windows. You come, they open your back, and you go out there, you do what you do, and then you come back in. So,
what does that do to someone's mind?
Well, the mind, it was like, you know, it was pretty much like torture, unless you were strong. You know, you had a lot of individuals that debrief. It was a thing called, you know, either debrief or die, you know? So a lot of brothers that were strong, that were solid, they leaned on each other for hope. Oof. And then you had those that, you know, I can't sit here and go into the next individual mind state. Some people became broken back there. Mm-hmm. Some people, it was to the point where individuals was putting feces on their body and they lost their mind. Mm-hmm. And torture don't come just on the physical aspect. It may come where, okay, somebody took your mail or somebody tampered with your food or talked to you crazy.
Right.
So it was torturous back there. And that was part of the genocide, the cultural genocide that we was talking about. I was stipulating earlier.
Right.
How,
right.
You know, they want to brainwash and censor individuals. They didn't want you to believe that you could come up out of here. So they saying, okay, if you don't debrief, then you're going to be here forever. So that's when...
what does debriefing mean?
Debrief mean like to step down, and you know, some gang members say they hanging up their flag and they quit, but some, you know, they put their flag on the wall and they still looking at it, they still active. But debrief in every aspect basically mean you know, to give up all the information and become a confidential informant
for them. Okay. And, for the prison, right? Okay.
But for the officials.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was real cruel in there. You know, you had the Green Wall. You know, the Green Wall was, like, developed in Tracy and in Tracy Prison, Sacramento, Folsom, but the majority of them is in Salinas Valley. And that was cruel. They was playing with mail. They sabotaged individuals. They'll put false snitch jackets on individuals. And then you have reactionaries actually biting into it. So when they take the leadership off the yard, the people, men of influence that was doing things peacefully, that was trying to maintain anti-hostilities, they replaced them with agent provocateurs, individuals that really didn't have the insight or the political structure
to maintain peace or maintain structure on the yard among all racial groups. Mm-hmm. So that's when you start seeing a lot of riots. You know, again, like I mentioned, issue with Hugo Pinnell, you know, when the thing happened in Folsom. A lot of people don't know that you had plenty of Asian provocateurs that were trying to sabotage the agreement during hostilities. So for right now, I don't know if you want to talk about the subject, what's going on right now, how they integrating SNY inmates with general population inmates. Well, they're doing that intentionally because of Prophet 57.
So you're talking about the conversion of the yards?
Yeah, the conversion of the yard is it's kind of crazy because you got a group of programmers, they say they're over 50. Mm-hmm. So what we were saying is you have individuals coming out of solitary confinement is objectively subjected to a culture shock. Mm-hmm. So what would be righteous is to put those individuals that want to program yards. Mm-hmm. And you'll put those individuals on the program yard so they can prepare to go home. They've been down 30 and 40 years. Versus you'll take an individual who debriefed or head out on another yard or whatever his or her politics may be, they'll put them on the general population. And it's not that these individuals want to clash. It's the concerted effort that CDC, the California state agents, working under the color of law, may be doing. Their concerted effort is to sabotage the people who decide to go home under Prop 57 or SB 260 or any other law that may have just came in place. Because if you can get more individuals to get 115, and then now, okay, that's less individuals going on through the board.
Right. So basically they're causing corrupt, they're causing confusion. So this is just their strategic malice way of keeping you guys down. Is that what you say? So the conversion of the yards is we've been covering that for the last 2-3 episodes. So, in your opinion, that it is causing havoc and within the system?
Yeah, I mean, because you got a lot of reactionaries on the yard. Some people don't know how to organize behind it, where you say, okay, well, you putting these guys on the yard, we're going to come into a class action lawsuit with those individuals because you put them in foreseeable harm. Mm-hmm. And
why are they individuals? What's their, why are they saying that their purpose, like what's their made up, whatever, their purpose of doing this?
Well, I think Scott Kern and some of the other officials are saying, well, you know, if you want to go home, you're going to give up the politics. And, you know, they're pitching this new CDCR, but there's no rehabilitation under the guise of that, because when you put people in foreseeable harm, how could you program or how could you engage in any type of self-change in a hostile environment? And they're saying because on one side, on the prisoner side, there's politics. It's just, you know, there's rules. It's like being at home, having a child, you're going to have rules in your house. Mm-hmm. So to keep order, there's going to be rules forever. But then on one side, you got the administration saying, well, no, we're going to end those rules. But ending those rules mean you're bringing back hostilities. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean by they're sabotaging the agreement to end hostility. Because, you know, no doubt, you're going to have different cultures, different philosophy, different ideology. Mm-hmm. Until we find common ground, and common ground will be peace, promoting peace as the new cool, per se. But if we're not able to work as a collective among ourselves, but you got the administration playing our politics, and then you had to look at it, okay, what's behind that? So, you know, a lot of officers that feel that, you know, they don't want to be a part of it, they've been transferring off of those yards. And then you got administrations where administrative individuals where we do 602s. I did a 602 before I left a class, a 602 with several individuals just to show.
And what's a 602?
A 602 is an inmate appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the due process you take from the first level, second level, and the third level, which third level will be in Sacramento. And you bring it to them, you know, whatever your claim may be,
right,
before you take it to a habeas corpus or 1983 is a civil suit.
So it's your complaint. Okay. Yeah, okay. Mr. King, this is so much. Yeah, we're definitely going to have another interview. We're going to take a short music break, and when we come back, if possible, I would like for you to just tell, like, your experience of being a part of Hunger Strike. But more importantly, I would love to hear about the things that you have going on right now and the different support that you need.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
I've lost the use of my heart, but I'm still alive. Still looking for the light in the endless pool on the other side. It's a wild, wild west. I'm doing my best. I'm a soldier of love, every day and night. I'm a soldier of love, all the days of my life. I've been torn up inside. Oh.
All right, folks, we are back at KPOO San Francisco. This is Prison Focus. That was Sade, Soldier of Love. We have Minister King on the line, who's been home for, what, less than 2 weeks, Minister King?
Yep, about a week and a half.
Woo! And he is just, I mean, super dope, brother. You are just giving me so many, like, just food for thought, and I just appreciate you just coming and taking the time to do this interview and telling us in such an insightful, deep way of the things that's going on currently as of right now in the system, and just your experience on, you know, your childhood. That's, you know, that's not easy to share yourself like that, and I just thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, my life is pretty much an open book. I don't really have nothing to hide because, you know, we in the information age anyway. But I just wanted to say, regarding, you had asked me earlier regarding getting back to the hunger strike,
mm-hmm.
there was a touching moment. It was also a historic moment for me because, again, in 2011, what happened was that's when I first went to ASU. What they call short-term restricted housing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the brothers had spilled over from Corcoran. I was in Corcoran State Prison. And that was telling us, hey, you know, we're about to go back into another hunger strike, and we're going to need some delegates over here in ASU. I was like, okay, what do they do? You know, what should we do? So we put down the platform of the demands for ASU because a lot of voices wasn't being heard just in ASU. So when we did it, we sent our demands to Mary Radcliffe at San Francisco Bayview. And so they published them, and we got a lot of backlash behind submitting our demands because they tried to separate try to conquer and divide and say, okay, well, these issues aren't correlated to the five core demands. And we were like, hold on. Anybody that's in solitary confinement, all our issues is the same because you'll go from ASU to the SHU. So I had wrote an article because one of the brothers died, one of the Southerners from Los Angeles had died during the hunger strike, and his name was Christian Gomez. Mm. And when he died, it caught on fire. Democracy Now! Talked about it. Everybody talked about it. So I was subjected to a campaign harassment. And the IGI, ISU came harassing, okay, you wrote this article. The article at the time was called This Isn't the Soft Cage, the editor of San Francisco Bayview. And from there, they was like, okay, we're going to validate you, you know, your affiliation. And so I just looked at it as rhetoric. Because now that you're trying to invoke fear into me, now I'm supposed to be even more braver. Because I'm already in prison. The biggest 115, biggest write-up I got was when the DA gave me my time to serve me my sentence. Mm-hmm. That was the biggest 115 I got. So now all you did was woke up some to the point where I got to investigate and look deep before I leak more. And what I seen was they had individuals just sitting there waiting for their DRBs. They had individuals, and we talking about just to go to board, figure out, okay, we're going to put you next. What is your affiliation? And a lot of it was false allegations. Mm-hmm. But that was in 2011. So then Prison Focus, news and letters, I think it was ARC. It was several organizations reached out. And they came to see us, and it was like, okay, what's going on? So we start. That's when we all start centralizing, and we run short-term restricted housing to the SHU. Everybody came together, and some of the delegates that was in Corcoran, we all met up, and that's when the mediation team start talking. They start getting more involved. And then in 2013, July 8th, 2013, that's when it went big. It was over 30,000. Prisoners as well as their family, they got involved.
Wow.
When I knew, okay, everything that we have now, you can see United Cage Brothers demands, Five Core demands, the editor San Francisco Bayview, or Prison Focus, mm-hmm. or Poor Magazine, and you can see that a lot of the things we have now, I want to give credit to the prison strike, and that's why I'm highlighting it. Mm-hmm. Whether it's family visits, what is Pell Grant? That came from the prison strike.
Right.
And a lot of things is going on now. I mean, the 13th Amendment. That came from the prison strike. So I just say that to say that brothers and sisters is incarcerated if they realize how powerful they are through the course of unity, mm-hmm. pulling their resources together as a collective, and then they can get about real change. And you know, change can just start from one flame.
Right.
And next thing you know, it's a fire. And right now, you know, I'm out here for the brothers and sisters incarcerated. Whether you're in Terre Haute, in August, they're going to have another forum about brothers and sisters behind the walls. And some of me and my brother, we're going to go out there, and I'm going to give a speech as a delegate for the California on behalf of the California state prisoners. So that's pretty much where I'm at right now.
Man, Minister King, you're just so inspirational. Just thank you, like truly, you know, there's brothers right now that are behind the walls that can hear this broadcast. And is just truly motivating, inspiring. What I always used to say inside is, like, I used to tell my friends and just anyone that will listen, that it's just so important. What I would say, express it, is that to not become a victim of the system, meaning, like, do not succumb to what they want us to be, how they want us to act. And, you know, these things are strategic. They're not, you know, oftentimes the choices and decisions that are being made are not to, you know, prison is supposedly, I mean, it's supposed to be for rehabilitation, right? And me personally, that just wasn't the case. So, Minister King, what are some things now that you're doing? You've been home for less than 2 weeks. For one, what does that feel like?
Well, I mean, it's different. I come home to a culture shock, and I'm trying to, you know, migrate in back with society and, you know, rebuild a relationship with my family and friends. But overall, I'm just happy, you know. It's surreal, because it's like walking to the Berkeley Arena or going to San Francisco or going to Sacramento to help some of the people out there. Or it just surreal, and it's like, it's everything I dreamed of. You know, some people dream of being a superstar or whatnot, but I dream of just walking a dog.
Whoa. Wow, it's deep. You know,
I dream of just drinking some water or finding a female companion or, you know, going to go eat lunch.
Right.
You know, I can't wait to give me a good job and turn it into a career and go from a career and turn it into a conglomerate.
What's your dream job? What would you like to do?
You know, I want to go back to school to get into mediation, and hopefully I could take that and attach it and wake up the agreement, then hostilities inside and out again, and try to go to the get involved with the UN. Mm-hmm. You know, so those are some of the things I want to do. And also, again, I was telling you about Cage. That's what me and some of my brothers, we're going to try to open Cage Universal as a reentry center.
Okay, so tell me more about Cage. This is your one of your the current things that you're working on.
Yeah, Cage is again is kings, queens, it's genocidal environments, and we're going to be doing a lot of environmental work. For right now, me and my brother Sean Ramsey, we're working on a documentary about homelessness in America. And we're starting off in Oakland, and we have a trailer. Basically, we get all the entertainers involved, those that say, you know, they're from this area or they be trying to hold them accountable now. And it's time to man up, you know. And we want to say there's been a lot of gentrification going on here, particularly here in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy because I come home and I'm seeing what I'm seeing, and I didn't see this 18 years ago. Mm-hmm. I got brothers and sisters that own black businesses. Matter of fact, my father owned a black business or a store in East Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these businesses have been replaced by other individuals. Some people of color, some not. But it's disturbing to see people homeless out here in America.
Mm-hmm.
And it make me go all the way back to Malcolm X said, America is prison. Because now we objectively subjected to these borders and these flagrant policies is putting people out here. And when they do go out and seek help, they're subjected to going into a dog shed.
Mm.
I don't think that's feasible. These tough sheds don't have basic necessities. So, yeah, we're doing a documentary on it. We're going to be doing a soundtrack, inviting other artists to get on our soundtrack. We're also raising a fundraiser right now for it. So, you know, that's just something I'm looking at. And then, again, I want to get into some environmental work, start some books, study. A lot of these young brothers don't read nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we want to start some book study groups and book clubs and get the youngsters to read and start talking about some of these issues and dealing with the temperament that's going on in society. Instead of talking about it, it's time for solutions for the pollution.
Solutions for the pollution. Ooh, that's good. How can people, if they want to support you, what can they do? Like, what type of support are you needing or wanting?
Basically, we looking for people to come out. They can contact me through either through Mary Ratcliffe, editor at San Francisco Bayview, mm-hmm. or you guys through Dorsey Nunn and all of us in Nunn, because I'm gonna be active here. But the type of support we're looking for in general is we're trying to establish support for this trailer, this homeless trailer, because we want to do one in Oakland, Sacramento, Los Angeles, and being maybe in Chicago somewhere. We're looking for artists. We're looking for people this internet savvy. We want to make T-shirts, re-entry. You know, basic things. We're not really looking for money and stuff like that. We're just looking for people to get involved. And if they have an organization, then we can link up and get involved with them and infuse the work if we share the same mission statement. Because this, right now, it's like we've been hearing a lot of people talk about it, and we just want to get active. That's, you know, we got a plan of action. You can see Declaration of United Cage Brothers at Poor Magazine, January 21st, 2016, see our whole platform. And we're going to have something else coming up. I'm kind of like, you kind of got me on the, that's why I was telling you earlier about the interview. I was trying to get our
brother.
Yeah, I was trying to get our brother involved because he got a few more things that he wanted as far as the websites and whatnot he could have told you about, but we can do that.
Oh, trust. Yeah, we definitely would love to have you back, Minister King, because you're very insightful, and I just have more questions. And unfortunately, we are down to the last 3 minutes. And yeah, as you're talking, I'm sitting here reading this thing that says African Americans made up 50% of the homeless population, despite comprising just 11% of the county's total population. Hashtag Oakland. And so that's just, you're talking about it's time for resolution. We got to be a doer, folks. We need to get involved. So you heard it right here. Minister King, he has some great, innovative things that are being done, and he needs your support. We need your support. You heard that it sounds like you can contact him through All of Us or None. You can contact me, and I will get in contact with him. That's London, LONDON, at prisonerswithchildren.org. Anybody through All of Us or None, Dorsey Nunn, and Prison Focus, right?
Yes. Or as what editor of San Francisco Bayview. Another thing,
yes,
I want to tell
Mary,
the brothers.
Yes.
I want to tell the brothers and sisters behind the wall, we need you to start writing in and supporting Bayview a little more, whether it's telling your families, you know, Bayview has been a voice mm-hmm. for the prisoners, and we looking for more support. So pretty soon we're going to be able to do a fundraiser for Bayview. But like the brothers and sisters, write in. I'm going to be going there and doing a lot of volunteer work, fundraising for them. And if you get, I'll read some of you guys' letters. And I respond, you know, send you pictures. We got a magazine called All Bay Magazine, and we're going to be trying to distribute that throughout the prison system. It's a lot of good things coming up for the brothers and sisters behind the wall, and I just want them to know that we're here. Mm-hmm. We have arrived.
Well, Minister King, I'm sure that I'm not just speaking for myself, that I'm speaking for many folks, that I just appreciate you. And I look forward to joining your efforts and to being a part of the solution.
Okay, I highly appreciate it, sister. You all have a blessed day. Stay focused and positive on your journey. All power to the people.
All power to the people. Talk to you later, Minister King.
Okay,
well. Bye. All right, folks, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Prison Focus. I am London, LONDON, at prisonerswithchildren.org. Please contact me if you have any requests for future shows, if you need any information on any of our guests. I would love to provide that for you. And of course, if you want to get more information on ACA6 and all the wonderful things that we have going on, we would love to provide that information for you. We have some great things, great just movements that we've been doing with ACA6. We got some resolutions that just passed in Los Angeles, and we will be back in Sacramento again this upcoming month. So again, just give me a call or shoot me an email, and I'll get all that information to you. Power to the people.
You're my baby, my lover, my lady, all my.